Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
Let's do this. Thank you very much for hanging out with me on the Danny Parkin Show, CBS Sports Radio, radio.com sports, Sirius 206. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams with their help. They can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. My name is Danny Parkins. You can follow me on Twitter at Danny Parkins, DannyParkins. Taking you up until 2 a.m. Eastern time. In about 35 minutes, my man Mike Meltzer, media star in Houston, will join the show because Deshaun Watson, my goodness, your table is ready. And in an hour and a half, NFL reporter from the Boston Globe, Ben Volen, will join the show to talk about the league, week 6, and if the Patriots are merely good or great. Because when I watch the rest of the league today, I'm not sure if we have a great team, so we may as well figure out if the Patriots are actually that squad. But before we get to all of that, just after 10 p.m. Eastern time, sounds like a good time for 10 things, week 6 of the National Football League. We begin with the win of the day for the San Francisco 49ers. The Niners are real. I kept saying I needed to see more. I needed to see them beat a real team. I wasn't going to give them the Browns at home, Monday Night Football, coming off the bye. Browns 2, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I said, beat the Rams. Then you're real. They didn't only beat the Rams, they blew the doors off the Rams in their building. Less than 100 yards passing from Jared Goff. Sean McVay had been basically unbeatable when he had extra time to prepare. The Niners were on a short week on the road. The Rams had played on Thursday Night Football the week before, so they had extra rest. They were at home. And the Niners put on a clinic. That was incredibly impressive. And honestly, I think you can make the argument that it is the best win for the San Francisco 49ers since they beat the Carolina Panthers in the 2013 divisional round of the playoffs to advance to what was their second NFC Championship game in a row. Ended up losing that one. Obviously, they had won the year before, when they ended up losing to the Ravens in the Super Bowl. Niners haven't been to the playoffs since that 2013 season. And this was a type of win that was a statement, and it has the feeling of the beginning of a new era of Niners football. The league is better when the Niners are good. It gives us that 4 o'clock Eastern window to have another good team on the West Coast. Those uniforms are awesome. Kyle Shanahan's really fun. George Kittle's a beast. Bosa's a beast. Jimmy Garoppolo might be the most handsome man I've ever seen. I'm comfortable to be able to admit that to you. That's a team that looks ready for primetime. I'm very impressed with the San Francisco 49ers. Second thing, 10 things at 10, week 6 edition. Man, I don't get the Browns. I don't get it. Odell Beckham is still as good as ever. Baker Mayfield had a gutsy performance today playing through injury. Nick Chubb's the man. Miles Garrett's the man. Denzel Ward's the man. Jarvis Landry's the man. They got a lot of talent, but they got no line. They seemingly have no coaching. Baker's receivers let him down today. Most of those interceptions were not on him. That was a pretty pathetic performance, if we're being honest, from Cleveland. They came in with all the hype in the world. and people love seeing the team that we build up come crashing down. And losing to Seattle in a vacuum, there's no shame in it. Russell Wilson is marvelous. He might be the MVP through six games, but I just can't figure out why Cleveland can't get going more consistently. It can't just be the offensive line, but I'd be very frustrated if I was a Browns fan right now. They just, you want to be able to hang your hat on something, right? Even if you're not good, you want to be able to say, all right, well, I know that, you know, the Bears are going to play good defense, or Dalvin Cook's going to be able to get his yards. Like, you want to be able to say, okay, we're a mediocre team, but we can rely on something. I don't know what the Browns can rely on week in and week out. That's a tough team to figure. Third thing from week six of the NFL, Minshew mania. Having a little bit of a meltdown, isn't it? I never got on this hype train. I thought it was an internet creation. Everyone's like, oh, he's the everyman. Yeah, how many everymen do you know that are sustainable NFL quarterbacks? I kept saying on this show and my show here in Chicago, I'd bet against him being a starter in the NFL in 2 years. On the day where the Jaguars gave out 35,000 mustaches and gave away free tickets to people wearing jorts because, oh, how cute, he's like Uncle Rico. 14 of 29 passing, 163 yards, two sacks, and a pick. He's had one game this year where he's had over 300 yards passing. Now, he had done a nice job taking care of the football prior to today, coming in with 9 touchdowns and 1 pick. That's impressive. But he's now taken 14 sacks. He threw a second pick. He's been fine. He hasn't been special. Let the league get more tape on him. I'm thinking Minshew mania is going to be derailed. He'll make plenty of money. He'll have a nice career. He seems like a really smart dude who could pick up an offense fast. He'll be in the league for a while. But Minshew is not a franchise quarterback. Speaking of not a franchise quarterback, we move to our fourth item of the day. Congratulations, Kirk Cousins. You are what we refer to as a bum slayer. You're good enough to get paid. You're good enough to beat the bad teams. You're good enough to tease your fan base that, oh, if Kirk Cousins just played like this, the Vikings are good enough to be a Super Bowl contender. Yeah, he crushed the Giants, who are, outside of Miami, the least talented defense in the league. And then the Eagles with Maddox and Darby and Jernigan, like their entire secondary is out, Jernigan the linemen, like they get all the backups in on defense. He torched the Eagles secondary. Good job. Congratulations. Let's see what happens when you start playing real teams again. My guess is you'll turn back into a pumpkin. Three of the next four are tough for the Vikings. My guess is Kirk Cousins goes back to being an overpaid pedestrian. He's a bum slayer, though. He can look real good against real bad teams when there's no spotlight on him. Speaking of a spotlight, as we move to number five, 10 things at 10, week six edition of the National Football League, the 2015 NFL draft had a rough day. Whew. Who was worse? Jameis Winston, who threw for 5 interceptions but 400 yards? Or Marcus Mariota, who couldn't muster up 200 yards of offense and got benched for Ryan Tannehill? I would bet against either one of them being a starter in the NFL next year. Jameis is more talented than Mariota, but he doesn't have it between the ears. No consistency. Mariota, I think his organization has let him down on some level. Different coaches, no legitimate number one receiver, failed draft picks at the top, constantly changing systems. He's regressed. I remember like his first 30 trips to the red zone where he either had a touchdown or an interception. It was all touchdowns, no interceptions. But he's going backwards. Absolutely brutal day for the former number one and number two overall picks. I don't think either of them are starting for their team next season, and I'd be surprised, frankly, if they started for any team. Number six, we had a tank bowl today between Washington and Miami. And the end of that game was downright hilarious. The Dolphins benched Josh Rosen. Fitzmagic comes in, immediately scores 2 touchdowns. on the second touchdown, there's 6 seconds left. Brian Flores is like, of course, we're playing for the win. We want to win. Wink, wink, wink. Let's run the old two-point conversion play where we do the wide receiver bubble screen and throw the ball 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. What could possibly go wrong? Oh, yeah, you get tackled right away. You don't get to do that over, you know. It's not two tries to get it in on the two-point conversion. Something tells me you should either run the ball so you're going forward, or, it's a novel concept, throw the ball, pass the sticks. It's the second time this year I've seen NFL teams run that garbage play on a two-point conversion. But it's a good strategy for Miami. Keeps you in line for the number one overall pick. But, my God, what a hilarious end to the Tank Bowl. Opposite end of that spectrum, those are teams that are looking for a franchise quarterback. The Jets have one. Whew. Sam Darnold, the word that I use for him is poise. And I liked him coming into the year just based on what I had seen last year. And I'm normally not a big press conference guy, but he handles the New York media really well. He's unflappable. He just does a nice job with everything. Doesn't seem to get too high when he throws a 92-yard touchdown pass to Robbie Anderson. Doesn't get too low last year when he starts out a game with a pick six. I think it was against the Lions. Like, he's just even-keeled. Facing the tough New York media, being on the back page of the New York Post, dealing with all the mono jokes. Like, he just seems like a dude who's wise beyond his years. That was a very impressive win. Cowboys are banged up. I don't think that game goes that way if Lyle Collins and Tyron Smith are available for the Cowboys, because I just don't think the Jets would have been able to stop the Cowboys if Dak would have had more time back there. Speaking of bum slayer, Dak Prescott's beaten up on a lot of bad teams this year. But the Cowboys losing wasn't the story there. I thought Sam Darnold coming back and solidifying and giving the Jets franchise legitimate hope for the future was the story there. That was a great win for the Jets. Number eight, I feel like this is going to make our top 10 takeaways from the NFL week each and every week until it happens. Falcons fans, you guys have been great to this show. You've been calling. You've been repping hard in the ATL. But my goodness, I feel so bad for you. Dan Quinn, when are you going to be fired? That's your defense that Kyler Murray is just carving up. And I like Kyler Murray. I was a believer. It's not an anti-Kyler Murray point. Have some pride, Atlanta. Play with some damn pride. Listen, I know your offense hung a bunch of points. What, 34-33? Cardinals defense, one of the five worst in the NFL. But they're young and rebuilding and first-year coach, first-year quarterback. You're supposed to be better than that. This is supposed to be your contention window. Dan Quinn, my goodness. I can't believe your key card's going to work tomorrow. You're going to get Gruden'd. Jay Gruden. And by the way, Matt Bryant, he looks like the love child of Dick Butkus and John Paxson. He is shockingly old. When he was kneeling down after he had missed that extra point, and his bald head and his gray mustache and his wrinkles were just there on the sideline, I honestly was worried that he wasn't going to be able to get up from the kneeling position. That was sad to watch. Number 9, 10 Things at 10, Week 6 edition. And by the way, you can all just call in with your top NFL takeaways. 855-212-4227 is the number. 855-212-4CBS. React to my takeaways or give us yours. Ian Rappaport reported today that if Kyle Allen keeps winning, things are going to get interesting in Carolina. I've been talking about the potential for a quarterback controversy in Carolina for 2 weeks now, but I hope that Ron Rivera and the Panthers are not doing that shoddy of analysis on this. if Kyle Allen keeps winning, man, he hasn't been that good. He threw for like 200 yards today. Jameis Winston kept giving away the ball. They hung 37 on the board, but that was not a dominating performance by Kyle Allen. 227 yards, QBR of 53, had two touchdowns, no picks. He was efficient. He was fine. He hasn't thrown a pick yet this season. But let me give you the game log on Kyle Allen. 227 yards against Tampa, whose defense is awful. 181 yards against Jacksonville, whose defense is good. 232 against the Texans, whose secondary is awful. 261 against the Cardinals, whose defense is awful. He's a checkdown artist. He's been fine. There's been nothing to suggest that Kyle Allen is elite or has any potential to be elite. Cam Newton is a former league MVP. If Cam Newton is healthy, he's way better than Kyle Allen has shown. Now, don't make it the same mistake that the Cowboys made in 2012, because Dak Prescott was winning. They couldn't give the ball back to Tony Romo. Romo was way more talented. That was just a really good team. If Kyle Allen is the reason why they're winning, you play him. But if they're just winning and Kyle Allen's a passenger who's along for the ride, that's no reason to not go back to your MVP quarterback. Last up, 10 things at 10. Speaking of MVP quarterbacks, people need to stop disrespecting Lamar Jackson. I'm not saying he's going to win the MVP this year. Far from it. He's been up and down, and he's dominated the lesser teams on his schedule. But he was the first quarterback in NFL history today to throw for over 200 yards and rush for over 150 in the same game. When people debate Lamar Jackson's ceiling, his ceiling is MVP of the league. His ceiling is Mike Vick with more consistency. Like, he is the best athlete at the position with an upside for an arm, with an offense that's catered to him and a really smart coach. So if you're selling your Lamar Jackson stock, I'll buy it. Now, the odds are obviously he will never win MVP. But when people talk about his ceiling and that he's only beating bad teams, man, give him some time. He is gifted at that position like very few people in the history of the league when we're talking about athleticism. And he seems to have some natural playmaking ability and awareness out there. So, yeah, he's got a ways to go as a passer, obviously. But what can Lamar Jackson turn into in the next 1 to 4 seasons while he's still in the prime of his athletic career? He can turn into the MVP if things break his way. 855-212-4227. Those are my top 10 takeaways from week 6 in the NFL. Mike Meltzer joins us to talk all things Houston football and the NFL, and maybe even a little baseball in 20 minutes. We get to your calls coming up. Plus, I want people to slow down on a little bit of lunacy that I heard in their NFL analysis today. That's coming up. It's the Danny Parkin Show, CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
Hey, it's the Danny Parkin Show on CBS Sports Radio, where our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. I gave you my top takeaways from week 6 in the NFL. That's where you can weigh in on yours, 855-212-4227. The Texans probably had the most impressive win. The Niners had the biggest statement win, if that makes sense. It was impressive that the Texans could go into Arrowhead and win that game. But we knew a lot about what the Texans are. The Niners, I think most of us still didn't really know if they were real or not. That told us the most about them. That was the biggest statement. But so I'm watching the Chiefs-Texans game today. And I used to work in Kansas City. I see a lot of people from Kansas City on social media. I've got buddies who work in Houston. Fairly plugged into that game as it's going on. I was surprised at the amount of analysis on figuring out the Chiefs' offense. Pat Mahomes is clearly not at 100%. The backups on the Chiefs' offensive line, left guard, left tackle, including left tackle Eric Fisher, former number one overall pick, they're not playing. So I know that he didn't have a touchdown pass against the Lions 3 weeks ago. I know they only scored 13 points against the Colts on Sunday Night Football, and then they lost at home today to the Texans. So the Chiefs are reeling and the Chiefs are flawed. But where they're flawed is not their passing offense and Pat Mahomes. The Chiefs cannot rush the passer. The Chiefs are the most penalized team in the NFL again. They cannot and choose not to consistently run the football on offense. They cannot stop the run on defense. So the Chiefs have a lot of flaws. They are nowhere near a perfect team. They are in that tier of teams where they probably would be second in most people's power rankings, but maybe they'd be as low as fifth or sixth. They're probably the second best team in the AFC, but they're trending in the wrong direction. But regardless, I would still bet on it being Chiefs-Patriots AFC championship game at Foxborough once the Chiefs get fully healthy. Because they're doing this with backup running backs, backup left side of the offensive line, Tyreek Hill's first game back, no Sammy Watkins today. Like, Chris Jones has been hurt, who's their best defensive player because Frank Clark's been a huge disappointment. But all I'm saying is there's plenty of room for criticism of the Chiefs. Plenty of it. They are flawed. I think every team in the NFL this year is flawed. Even the Patriots, and we'll talk about that a little bit later with Ben Volen from the Boston Globe. He joins me in about an hour and 10 minutes. But when you're doing your burial of this Chiefs team, I wouldn't focus on Pat Mahomes in the passing offense. He's clearly hurt, and even him hurt is still really, really damn impressive. And their flaws are just, they're numerable, but they're elsewhere. Once that offense gets healthy, they will be the scariest offense in the NFL again. There's no doubt in my mind. But right now they're not, and they're still pretty damn impressive. We'll talk about the other side of that coin. I actually think Deshaun Watson is underappreciated nationally for a couple of specific reasons. Media star Mike Meltzer from the great city of Houston joins me coming up next.
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
Thanks for hanging out on the Danny Parkin Show, CBS Sports Radio, the radio.com app. The biggest statement of the day was made by the San Francisco 49ers, but the most impressive win of the day was done by the Houston Texans, which is why Houston media star Mike Meltzer, at Mike Meltzer on Twitter, host of the Mike Meltzer podcast, which blends two things that go together like peanut butter and jelly: sports law and the Houston Texans. My old friend Mike Meltzer with me on CBS Sports Radio. Meltzer, what's up, buddy?
Danny, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. So how does the Venn diagram look on this podcast of sports law and the Houston Texans? How big of an intersection is there there?
That's a good question. I'm still trying to figure that out with the audience, but usually there's one or two sports law podcasts during the week, and then I like to do a recap episode for every Texans game, which will be I'm kind of in the middle of doing right now. I've recorded like half of it, but I'm trying to kind of blend these audiences together. It'll take some time.
People should download the Mike Meltzer podcast. He's a very talented dude. So before we get into any of the micro stuff from the game, I have a big picture theory here on Deshaun Watson that he's actually underappreciated and under-discussed nationally because of Pat Mahomes' greatness and Baker Mayfield's dynamic personality, that they get most of the attention of this young quarterback generation. Am I off base there?
No, I think that's fair. Also, the fact that the Texans haven't really played in a ton of big games, and especially with Deshaun, they've only played one playoff game. So I think the national public hasn't had a chance to see Deshaun Watson play in a divisional round game, an NFC championship game as well. And so I think at the NFL level, it seems like the Texans aren't really discussed much nationally. And so I think that plays a part in it. But I think that theory is pretty fair, yes.
But I guess, like, you're right. He's only played in one playoff game. But, like, if Pat Mahomes did not exist, which I know would be a terrible thing for the NFL, I feel like Deshaun Watson would be in the State Farm commercial with Aaron Rodgers as kind of like passing the baton. Like, he's so unbelievably talented. I feel like that would be his platform.
Well, here's where I would push back against that is if you look at Deshaun's body of work, he had a fantastic rookie season until it was cut short by the torn ACL, right? But last season, I think Deshaun had a good year, and the Texans won 9 games in a row. Not easy to do in the NFL, but if you look at the game they had today at Kansas City and this kind of win, like, they've almost never had these kind of wins under Deshaun and really as a franchise and certainly under Bill O'Brien. So whereas you see Pat Mahomes putting up, I mean, pick your quarterback, Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, those kind of numbers, Deshaun's numbers have been good, and he's been a good quarterback, but his achievements haven't been at that level. He hasn't played on a team that you could say, hey, this team is one of the best in the NFL. Or in the case of Baker Mayfield, hey, here's this dynamic guy who's like revitalizing football in a football-starved city. So he hasn't had those things going for him. He's just played pretty well for a decent to above-average football team, maybe until today.
And I just think that we're starting to see, now that he hasn't been sacked in each of the last 2 games, how good he is if he was actually put in a situation where he had protection.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Now, one thing for your audience to know, I don't think that protection is just an offensive line issue. Like, a couple of weeks ago, some of the sacks that he took against Carolina were on him because Deshaun has a tendency to basically hang on to the football, extend plays. Sometimes it works, but sometimes there are bad things. Like, he gets hit way too often. That has not happened these last 2 games. Danny, the Texans' offense has not punted in their last 3 quarters of football. They have been on a total roll since Deshaun fumbled against Atlanta, got the ball off the turf, and ran for a first down. Since that point, they have been incredible. They scored 31 points today. They had 3 drop touchdown passes. Like, this team was Kansas City was fortunate they didn't score 49 points. 31 was almost the lowest they could have scored today.
Well, is that a product of Atlanta and Kansas City being awful defensively?
I think it's part of it. I think it's part of it, but I think part of it is they're figuring it out. Like, not to get too nerdy on you, but last year the Colts had a lot of success against Deshaun twice late in the season, one in Week 15 and one in the playoffs. And I frankly felt like the Colts defensive coordinator, a guy named Matt Eberflus, I feel like he got the better of Deshaun Watson. I think that they sent a lot of blitzes, especially from the edge, that he just wasn't reading and he wasn't seeing right. If you look at the game last Sunday and today, these are like really innocuous plays. Like, if you're watching them on red zone, you've got like 4 or 5 TVs going, you might see Deshaun like dump it off for a couple of yards and it's like not a big deal. For this offense, it is a big deal. When he recognizes the blitz and he drops it off to a running back or a tight end, they have been living like that over the course of these last 2 games. And if he's able to do that and make those kind of adjustments and get protected as a result, I really feel like the ceiling on this offense is very, very high. And you've seen that these last 2 games.
Mike Meltzer, host of the Mike Meltzer podcast. He has been covering the Texans and been in Houston media for the better part of the last decade. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Meltzer. What's their ceiling in the AFC, Mike?
Well, I think they can beat anybody on any given Sunday. That includes the Patriots, who I don't think are playing very well offensively. The problem is the Texans never beat the Patriots under Bill O'Brien. I don't think it's a team that can do a lot of damage in the playoffs as far as winning the conference unless they get a bye, because I think they have some similarities to the Eagles where, like, they don't have a lot in the secondary when it comes to covering really good receivers, which is why I think if you're in Kansas City today or tomorrow, you're really upset about the play calling, because the Texans who struggle in the secondary to begin with, were without Jonathan Joseph, one of their better corners, and Bradley Roby, who I think has had a nice season as a free agent pickup, and they still were able to hold down Kansas City. I don't think this team is talented enough to win the AFC unless they get one of the byes, but with this offense, the way they're playing, the way Deshaun is playing, and how many weapons they have, I think they can beat anybody with that offense the way it's clicking right now.
How much credit does Bill O'Brien get in all of this?
Well, I think you have to give him credit. I mean, Bill is one of those guys who, like, he's almost like Brian Billick in Baltimore in a way, in that Billick was an offensive guy who never had good offenses. Same thing with O'Brien. He's been living on defense over the course of a lot of the wins they've gotten since 2014, but not today. And, I mean, what more can I ask for? Like, again, they haven't punted since the first half against Atlanta. Their punter basically took today off, and the worst plays they have are basically drop touchdown passes. I think he's done a really nice job. And if you want to go through, like, one specific strategy thing, so 4th-and-3 late in this game, under the 2-minute warning, the Texans pass up what would have been, I think, a 44-yard field goal attempt, up by 7 to go for it. They hit a nice play, Watson to DeAndre Hopkins, on one of the plays I was talking about. Like, against the blitz, Kansas City sending a lot of guys. They have an open DeAndre Hopkins against Tyrann Mathieu. I think O'Brien, who has been way too conservative in big spots against good teams the last 5 years, he's been more aggressive on fourth down. And I really like seeing that kind of call. And ultimately, like, you're judged based on the results. I know the Chargers have been disgraceful tonight against Pittsburgh, but the Texans winning 3 weeks ago in L.A., I thought that was the biggest win of the O'Brien era. This today, no question. You can go back through every win the Texans have had since 2014. Today, on the road, Arrowhead, Mahomes, Andy Reid, this was without question, by a huge margin, the most impressive win of the Bill O'Brien era.
Their next game is huge for the division at Indianapolis, who's been very impressive this year. How do you think the Texans match up with the Colts?
I think this is going to be a really tough game, especially with the way that the Texans' offense has played. They played really well the last two games. Like, can they keep that going? I also think whenever you're facing a team off a bye week, I mean, that's obviously difficult. And I like Frank Reich a lot as a head coach. I think the Colts, despite Ursay being kind of a lunatic, are a pretty well-run organization with Chris Ballard and then Frank Reich. It seems like they've bounced back fairly well off Andrew Luck retiring. Historically, that stadium, not an easy place for the Texans to play. But I would say, like, that's going to be one of the better games of next weekend. And if the Texans were able to win that game, then I think you are talking about a team that people will legitimately be saying, hey, this team is a contender, and this team is one of the best teams in the AFC.
We're talking to Mike Meltzer. He hosts the Mike Meltzer podcast, been in the Houston media scene, covering the Texans and the entire city sports scene for the last decade or so. Hey, Mike, you're a Jets fan, man. I assume you're still a Jets fan. What's your impression of Sam Darnold?
My God, he was a revelation today, right? Like, if you ever let me put it this way. If you ever find yourself watching football and frustrated about how could that be a roughing the passer, how could that be unnecessary roughness against a defensive player and a quarterback? Watch the Jets today with Sam Darnold versus what they've been the last 3 weeks with Trevor Siemian and Luke Falk. Like, it was a complete world of difference. I mean, without Sam Darnold, they may as well not even have a facility. They may as well, like, completely burn the franchise down. I mean, they can't play games without Sam Darnold, and also having C.J. Mosley out the last month also hurt. But, like, I mean, he was good today, right? I mean, I think we all saw it. And I think the biggest thing is when you look at these lousy quarterbacks like Siemian and Luke Falk, behind a shaky offensive line, they can't do a lot. If you go back through the impressive plays that Sam Darnold had today against the Cowboys, a lot of those are him manipulating the pocket, moving around, finding his own throwing lanes. Like, that's where he's really, really good. That's why I think he's the answer as their franchise quarterback. He still turns it over a little bit too much. But he just makes all the difference, and it makes it a lot of fun to watch.
He seems so poised, like totally unflappable by being the quarterback in New York City, which to me from afar, who doesn't watch every snap of him but have seen enough last year and this year, he just seems like nothing really gets to him. And in that city, in that spotlight, I feel like that's exactly what you need.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think the same actually applies for Daniel Jones. Like, listen, we all know the bottom line is you have to be able to play. You have to be accurate, read defenses, you know, be strong in the pocket, like all that football stuff. But I think when you are trying to be the franchise quarterback in a place like New York, I think the Eli Manning mentality is a really important thing to have. And I wonder how someone like Baker Mayfield would have dealt with some of the things that Sam Darnold from – I mean, Sam hasn't been criticized a lot, but you know what I mean. Like, if you are drafted in that market and you're seen as a franchise quarterback, I think that you have to have a certain, like, level-headedness, basically tune out everything. And I think the Jets and the Giants both have quarterbacks who kind of fit that, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, of course it makes sense to me. And I just – listen, I don't feel bad for either fan base or either team. I don't really have a rooting interest there, but I am a believer that sports are generally speaking more interesting when the really passionate fan bases, you know, have good teams. That's why I'm excited for the Niners to be back. It would be fun if there was a legitimate New York football quarterback rivalry for the next 10 years between those guys.
By the way, do I have time to ask you a quick question? Is that okay?
Yeah, of course. You have had 90 seconds.
All right, real quick. How are the people in Chicago handling this whole Watson-Mahomes thing? Because this feels like an utter disaster every single week. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, not well, Mike. Like, I bring it up because I wanted Deshaun Watson to be picked first overall in that draft. And obviously Mahomes would be first if we did a redraft. But the Bears obviously traded up and had a chance at both of them. And Mitch Trubisky still has a chance to be the best quarterback in Bears franchise history, and he sucks. So, like, it's a really uncomfortable thing because the team is really good, and Ryan Pace has made a lot of good moves, but getting it this wrong, this badly at this position is arguably fireable. So I asked today what people were drinking for the not Mitch Trubisky Bowl when they were watching Mahomes and Watson, which was on local TV here in Chicago. And, like, of the first 30 responses, 22 of them were some variation of the joke of bleach. Like, that's what they were drinking. So, you know, it's not going great here. Thanks for asking.
I've seen a lot of bad quarterback play myself, so I sympathize with you.
Of course. Mike Meltzer, download this man's podcast. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Meltzer. Mike, I appreciate the time tonight, man.
Danny, always enjoy it. Thank you.
That's Mike Meltzer down in Houston, the Mike Meltzer podcast. I get what he's saying about Deshaun Watson not having the consistency of the high-profile games, but just the eye test, you know this guy is a stud. Like, if he was dealt the hand that Dak Prescott's been dealt, he'd be the MVP of the league. He's absolutely marvelous. We hear from you on the biggest stories of the NFL Week 6. Next is the Danny Parkin Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.